This is becoming embarrassing. Bear with me. Okay, the scripture reading this morning is from Exodus 20:16, and the parallel passage is Deuteronomy 5:20. And verse 16 reads as follows: "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor."
Well, we're a little bit discombobulated this morning. And Brother Jim will mention it in the announcements, but got a call just a few minutes before services, and Shelly has fallen, and Alan had to take her to the hospital for stitches, and he's supposed to preach. So I got busy looking on my PowerPoint files for the oldest sermon that you hadn't heard in 10 years, so I could preach it in the second part, and then I forgot to turn the projector on. But we're ready to go here. So in this part of the service, when it's been my turn, we've been taking a look at the Ten Commandments, trying to find application for them, even to us as Christians in this Christian dispensation. And we come to the ninth commandment: you shall not bear false witness. This is an intriguing commandment in the minds of many people simply because it is so specific. You shall not bear false witness. Rather than some command that would be broader and take in all types of misuse of the tongue, it is very specific. Now, I think the key to understanding that is two things. One, the law of Moses does go on and prohibit other types of this type of dishonest conduct. For instance, in Leviticus 19 and verses 11 and 12, it says, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. You shall not swear falsely by my name so as to profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." So, just because this commandment is as specific as it is, doesn't mean those other misuses of the tongue were okay. They are condemned as well in the broader texts of the law of Moses. But why be this specific? And I think the answer to that is that it comes down to what we talked about at the very beginning of this series, that the Ten Commandments basically are expounding upon the two great commandments. The first four: you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. And the last six, including this one: you shall love the neighbor as yourself. And so when you look at it from that context, you shall not bear false witness is telling us about something we do that will harm our neighbor. It is an action that is directly against and in violation of that second great commandment. And so we want to look at that for just a few minutes in the study this morning. And so there are three key words in terms of our understanding and application of this commandment for our study this morning. And the first one is the word witness. The Hebrew word is defined this way: a witness is a person who has firsthand knowledge of an event, or one who can testify on the basis of a report which he has heard. Now, in some legal systems, the second is not permitted. For instance, in our courts, if all you have is somebody else has said, that's hearsay, and that would be excluded in a court of law, criminal court of law in our country. But the Hebrew word encompassed both. It was, I saw it or I heard it. But the bearing witness says, I saw it or I heard it. So the Hebrew application of the word would stop at, which you sometimes would hear people say, gossiping. Well, I talked to so-and-so, and they heard this. That was not permissible under Hebrew law. You had to see it or hear it for yourself. And the word witness is pretty well used that way in the English language as well. And it is the word that is used in almost all translations. I looked, I think, at 12 translations prepping for this lesson. And I found two of the more modern ones, instead of saying witness, uses the word testimony. Don't give false testimony. And so I think that is more up to date with the way we use our English language. The witness is the person in our English, modern English usage. The testimony is what they say as a witness. And so it's the same type of idea. But the second key word is false. And interestingly enough, while the Ten Commandments doesn't directly say do not lie, that word false in Hebrew is the word lie. And so literally, instead of saying don't give false witness, it says don't give a lying witness. Don't witness against someone something that you know is not true. And so our English adjective false modifies the noun witness, or the verb witness, adverb, be an adverb if it's doing the verb. But so it modifies that to clearly identify that what this command is prohibiting is someone who knowingly says something that is not true about someone else to harm them, in order to bring them harm. And that's the word against. Now, in the Hebrew language, prepositions can have many, many meanings. And if you go into Hebrew grammar, and I'm not a scholar by any stretch of the imagination, the same preposition can mean different things based upon the grammar, the kind of word that's used, and the structure of the grammar. So I'm just going to simply say that the translators, all of them, say the preposition as it's in this text means against. And our English definition of against, according to Webster's dictionary, simply means that which is opposed to someone else. So it's giving a testimony that you know is not true because of your opposition to someone else. So it's very clear when you put these three words together that this is a prohibition of the giving of false witness because you have the intent to harm someone with that witness. I think important for us is to understand that there are two applications that could be made of this command, and both are made in the Old Testament, and both would be applicable to us here in the 21st century as Christians. The first of these applications, and I chose three words because it just depends on how you look at it. One that is public, before everyone, formal, like in a court of law, and particularly legal. So somebody going into a public forum or more precisely a court of law and saying something that they know is not true about someone else for the purpose of doing harm to them. It may be very well to do harm to them to avoid harm coming to themselves. In other words, if there was a person who violated the law in some way and was subject to being punished, if that was discovered, if they could convince the public and the courts that another person is guilty of that, they will get the punishment, you will escape the punishment. You're protecting yourself, you don't care that it hurts someone else. And that's very much a part of this command. In the law of Moses, the law required that a man provide the testimony of a witness, that if he knew something, he had to provide the testimony. Very much like our phrase you hear today in concern about illegal activities such as drug trafficking or human trafficking or terrorism. If you know something, say something. If you see something, say something. That was a requirement of the law of Moses. In Leviticus chapter 5 and verse 1, it says, "Now if a person sins after he hears a public adjuration to testify when he is a witness, whether he has seen or otherwise known it, if he does not tell it, then he will bear his guilt." So to have the information when the information is required and not give it was sinful. And so the law of Moses really left no room for the person who says, "Well, I know what I saw, but I don't want to get involved." That was not an acceptable excuse. If you witnessed it, then you were required to give the testimony against it. The law also specified that you must give a true account of what you saw or heard. Exodus 23 and verse 1, "You shall not bear a false report. Do not join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness." So your witness has to be true. The law demands that. And so you might say, "Well, what are we talking about?" Well, there's a really great example of this in the Old Testament, in the book of 1 Kings chapter 21. It's a story I think most everybody in this audience would know. It's the story of how Jezebel solved her husband Ahab's depression because he had tried to buy a vineyard from Naboth, and Naboth refused to sell it because it was his family's inheritance. And Ahab became depressed. And Jezebel saw that he was depressed, and she basically said, "You're the king, you should have whatever you want. I'll take care of this for you." So when you go to 1 Kings chapter 21 and verse 9, the record tells us, "Now she," and that's Jezebel in that context, "wrote in the letter saying, 'Proclaim a fast and set Naboth at the head of the people.'" So she writes this letter to the leaders of the town of Jezreel, where the vineyard was, where Naboth lived. And she says, "You see two worthless men before him, and let them testify against him, saying, 'You curse God and the king.' Then take him out and stone him to death." So the men of his city, the elders and the nobles who lived in his city, did as Jezebel had sent word to them, just as it was written in the letters which she had sent to them. They proclaimed a fast, and they seated Naboth at the head of the people. Then the two worthless men came in and sat before him, and the worthless men testified against him, even against Naboth, before the people, saying, 'Naboth cursed God and the king.' So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones. Then they sent word to Jezebel, saying, 'Naboth has been stoned and is dead.'" And when you look at that story, the law of Moses required two witnesses. So she conspired, and she says, "You find the two guys that are willing to do this, and you accuse Naboth, and you convict him and stone him, and let me know that it's all done." We recognize that God held her and her husband in judgment for that action. But even in regular society, as long as there has been society, that type of false witness, when discovered as in a legal system, is considered a crime against society. In modern jurisprudence, to give false testimony is a crime in and of itself. But the second application is the one that we probably need to think about more than any other, and that's a private or personal type of violation of this command. I think it can correctly be observed that the formal giving of testimony happens rarely in most of our lives. I am 74 years old. I have never been called into court and put under oath and asked to be given testimony. And that's probably true of most everybody else in the auditorium this morning. Now, we might occasionally be called to give some type of formal testimony. Some of you have used me as a reference on a job application, and the potential employer calls and says, "Do you know this person? Do you vouch for them, or what do you say about them?" That's kind of a form of a personal and merges public, but it's not legal. You're not under oath. You're not violating the law, but you certainly would be violating this command if you said some terrible things about that person because you wanted to keep them from getting the job. That would be giving a false testimony to harm them. So I believe the threat of violating the ninth commandment is most prevalent in our everyday life as it relates to the lives of others. That is essentially what makes gossiping a sin. You're saying things which are not acceptable testimony, and they may or may not be true, but they can become more and more untrue every time they're repeated by somebody else. And the law of Moses did not ignore that specific application of the ninth commandment. Solomon particularly lists it as one of the seven things that God hates. Now, I know when Alan is up here, he's been doing a series on those seven things, so he may have already talked about this, and I'm not going to talk about it any great deal. But in that Proverbs passage, Proverbs 6, where it says there are six things that God hates, even seven, verse 19 in Proverbs 6 says, "A false witness who utters lies and who spreads strife among brothers." That's what gossip does. Saying things which aren't true or not totally true. You know, we just put a little nuance on it, and it causes conflict and it harms people. David said in Psalm 101, verse 5, "Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. No one who has a haughty look and an arrogant heart will I endure." God will not tolerate us saying things about others that are not true to harm them to gain our own personal advantage. He says that is sinful. So the point is, you don't have to be sworn into court in order to damage another human being with false testimony. And if you do that, you're in violation of the law of God. Well, let's, for just a second, as we bring this to a close, talk about Jesus and this ninth commandment. The truth of the matter is Jesus actually said very little in his personal teaching about this, other than the fact that he endorsed it. There's two incidents in the gospel where what Jesus did is that he acknowledged the force of this commandment. The first of those is in his conversation with the rich young ruler in Matthew 19, specifically verse 18. Remember that the young ruler said, "What do I need to do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus says, "Keep the commandments." And the young ruler said, "Which ones?" And so in verse 18, Jesus names several of them, and in that, he says, "You shall not bear false witness." So Jesus recognized the validity and the authority of this command and endorsed it in that conversation. The second one is a little bit more involved. It's in Matthew 15, where Jesus says in verse 11, "It is not what enters into the mouth that defiles a man, but what proceeds out of the mouth, this defiles the man." You might remember this incident. The Pharisees criticized Jesus' disciples for eating without washing their hands. And so Jesus makes this statement, and then a couple verses down, Peter asks him, says, "What do you mean by that? Explain that to us." And so in verse 18, Jesus says, "It is the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, And those defile a man, for out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornication, thefts, false witnesses, slanders. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man. And so Jesus again makes reference, and you notice how many of the Ten Commandments he pointed out there. He says, they come from the heart, they defile you. Therefore, we can safely conclude, I believe, as we bring this to a close, that the Ninth Commandment is as applicable to us as Christians today as it was to the Jews to whom God gave the Ten Commandments. I believe Cliff has the closing prayer for this segment, and then we'll go into our Bible classes.